Well, hello and welcome to a special edition, an iced-in edition of the Aging Well Together show. We're actually recording this one because one of us, being me, is iced in. But we have wonderful guests today, and the show must go on, and I'm so excited. I have just wonderful friends and colleagues joining us today. We're going to be talking again all about caregiving issues and caregiving research. I joined by Sarah Verbiest, who is a second-time guest on the Aging Well Together show. She is director of the Jordan Institute for Families at the UNC School of Social Work. And also, so excited, one of my super close colleagues and friends who I get to work with all the time, we have Karen Appert, the co-lead of the North Carolina Caregiving Collaborative. She is co-lead with me. I'm the other co-lead, and we've been in meetings all morning. And when we were able to switch to Zoom, I'm so excited she could join us. And we're going to talk, we're going to continue a conversation that we actually started. I looked up, it's episode 83. And that's when Sarah was with us with Katalia Alexander. And we hinted that there was going to be more exciting caregiving work to share. And so thrilled to be able to start one of our early 2026 shows with some fun updates and information. I am looking forward to all we'll discuss together. But before we dive into our show, as always, I want to give a shout out to WCOM LP Chapel Hill Carrboro for hosting our weekly Aging Well Together show. You can catch our show live or recorded in the studio or from an iced-in home every Thursday from 2 to 3. We are on 103.5 FM, or you can stream us live through WCOMFM.org. The Aging Well Together show is brought to you by the always helpful team at the Orange County Department on Aging. Besides being our wonderful sponsors and expert guests on the show, and they have been busy. We have such a great 2026 series of shows. I've been emailing with them nonstop. We put together like 10 shows over the past few days, that will be all throughout the year. But each week, Marilyn Hoyle also is wonderful about taking our shows and turning them into podcasts and putting them on the website. So if you want to catch up on any of past shows, especially episode 83 after this show, if you want to hear more about caregiving research, or if you want to find a range of local Orange County aging resources, you can go to Orange County Department on Aging's website. I know I'm talking fast. I will slow down to share the website. It's www.orangecountync.gov/aging, orangecountync.gov/aging. I always make a big deal about the NC, or you are going to get to Orange County, California, which is probably a bit warmer than we are right now here in Orange County, North Carolina. If you have any questions about local resources, and especially local caregiving resources, because we're going to be talking a lot about that today, you can also call the Orange County Department on Aging at 919-968-2070. That's the main number, 968-2070. And if you have any questions about our shows, or you do want to suggest a topic or a person or organization, we do have other free spots available this year. So let me know. Feel free to email me at agingwelltogethershow@gmail.com, agingwelltogethershow@gmail.com. Woo! All right. My fabulous co-host, Alicia Reed, is back with me. We're not sure if her audio will work, but we're going to try. So hopefully you'll be able to hear her wonderful voice. Alicia and I miss each other. We have not been able to be in the studio together for a long time, and I can see her. She made it to the studio, but I couldn't. Alicia is one of our extraordinary wellness instructors with the Orange County Department on Aging and a dedicated community volunteer. She's also host of Afternoon Talk with Alicia, which comes on right after our show, and she is waving because she made it to the studio. And as for me, I am Heather Altman. I've spent over 25 years working in aging services and supports. I help older adults and their families connect with resources in our community. I'm a caregiver for older family members, and at 55, I'm focusing on my own changing needs. So I am super invested, as I always love to say, in how we are all aging well together. All right, I gotta stop talking soon because we've got great guests. I am so excited. As I said, welcome back to the show, Sarah Verbiest, the director of the Jordan Institute for Families at the UNC School of Social Work, where she's also a clinical professor. And Sarah is also a public health social worker. I need to do that shout out because we're both public health folks, researcher, innovator, advocate, mom, wife, sister, friend, and daughter. And then my wonderful friend, Karen Appert, who at the last minute when we were able to switch to Zoom can join us because she's in Winston-Salem. So she's not usually able to come to Carrboro. Karen will share, but she's a longtime caregiver, family caregiver, caregiver advocate. She's a gerontologist by training from our own UNCG, right? UNC. Oh, no. Which one? Okay. No, never mind. She's also a gerontologist. She'll tell us from where. I've messed that one up. And she is co-lead of the North Carolina Caregiving Collaborative. Welcome back, Sarah. And welcome, Karen, for the first time of the show. You've heard about this radio show for years, and it's been terrible. I haven't been able to have you on. Hello, friends.
Hi, Heather.
Hello. All right. Well, Karen, why don't you go first since I hadn't prepared and already messed up where you got your wonderful degree. Tell us before we get into caregiving as a topic, a professional topic, a research topic, talk about personally, if you don't mind, how you got into this field and where you
Sure.
got your degree.
Yeah, no, I know. I always find it interesting when something like that comes up because it's legitimately not something we talk about all the time, right? Like, how did this happen? What was your trajectory? So, don't worry. I totally understand. And I actually took a very different approach because my background is in marketing and communication. So, my husband and I had a marketing firm. Because we were working for ourselves. When my mom was diagnosed with MS and started having trouble, she was in the Boston area. We moved her down here, and I was able to help care for her. Right after she moved, I was actually pregnant with my first child. And right after she moved, within 6 months, she had a grand mal seizure and was told by her neurologist that she couldn't work or she shouldn't work or drive because of where the lesions on her brain were from her MS. And we had seen enough reasons to agree with that we said, okay, we'll kind of take that over. She was only 55, I was 31,
Wow.
with a 3-month-old child at the time this all happened. So, what I always said was it was great I had my own business because it made it easier for me to be able to adjust my schedule as needed when I had to do transportation for her, anything she needed. And that became even more important as she then developed dementia in her later years. And I had to do much more hands-on caregiving. But through that, I used to joke, kind of jokingly say, if this weren't so frustrating, it'd be fascinating. That was my line. And
Oh, I love
my family heard that all the
that.
time.
If
Right,
this, I'm writing it down.
Alicia?
I'm writing it down. I'm writing it down.
Oh yeah, she's writing it down. Alicia and I have our notes we like to do. Yeah.
So through that, because as I'm not working in the field and my mom wasn't at Medicare age, so I wasn't getting any of the updates on like all the work that was being done in the caregiving space. I'm thinking, how do I do this? And because she had MS, I always said it was like watching the aging process happen in front of my eyes very much earlier than a lot of people did because she was walking with a walker earlier. First it was a cane, then it was a walker. She ended up not ever needing to have a wheelchair for like full time, which she was very proud of. I mean, she worked really hard to be able to keep walking with MS. So anyway, through that, when I would say if it weren't so frustrating, it'd be fascinating. I was at an AARP event, heard someone talking about the study of gerontology, which embarrassingly now I admit I didn't know what gerontology was. And so I started asking questions. It turned out there was a graduate certificate program at Appalachian State and it was all online. And I thought, what's the harm if I go and do that program? It could help me help my mom. And it was only a year and a half, and I got to interact, meet, and interact with the wonderful Ed Rosenberg. Shout out to Ed. He spoke with me about the program, and then told me, don't expect it to change your life, because this is it's just a certificate program that you can use to add on to what you're already doing. What he didn't know was I was already kind of in love with the whole idea of aging and how interesting it is when you overlay that on anything. So I finished that program and wanted more, and ended up doing an online master's program through, it was through Kansas State University, but it was through a great program called the Great Plains Ideas Program, where you took classes through, there were five different schools, and whatever classes were available at any given time through this online program, you could take them for your core classes. And it had a lot of really interesting other classes that you could take, electives that you could take when you were to add to your degree. So anyway, that's where I got my degree. So
No, that is fascinating. And I knew there was a North Carolina connection. So that's the App State, but I did not realize. And I met you when you were a graduate student. I mean, we go
oh,
back
that's right. That's right.
2014, 2015. And so, but, and we are in meetings all the time. And this is what's fun about this kind of show when it's a more casual talk. It's like, really? I didn't realize some of this. And then, all right, so we'll switch to Sarah now, and because then we'll come back to talk about your connection now running the North Carolina Caregiving Collaborative. But Sarah, remind us of your journey, how you got interested in this topic.
Sure. Well, actually, my research and other work is on the opposite age of the spectrum, which is as families are being born and coming together. But there are a lot of threads that connect, as we talked about in episode 83. And I've also spent a lot of time thinking about the life course. So thinking about, all of these different transitions and ages and stages that we have, and thinking about what are things that can help support and protect us as we go through our lives, and also what are some of the risks that get in our way. So that's a little bit of the professional side, but also as a person, I've been a caregiver in a lot of different ways, but until recently, I don't think I would have defined myself as having been in a caregiver role, because what I've noticed is with the people around me that it's just been like moments when they've just needed more, and I've been able to have the gift of walking with them. And so it's only recently that I've been trying to think, how is that part of my identity? In terms of the Jordan Institute, I will say that thinking about caregiving, and particularly how we can support caregiving through research, which is something we do pretty well at a university, has been something I've been talking about with our Dean Denby Brinson, for several years now. And so this work coming together is a dream, because caregiving is such a, it cuts across so many parts of social work that it feels like just a really nice connection. So those are just some of the ways I got here. And what people may not know, and what you may have forgotten, Heather, is that when I bumped into a caregiving crisis in 2024, and I was just flailing about for resources, I got your name, and actually you talked to me, you won't remember, on
Did
the phone.
was I helpful?
Yes, you were very helpful. And I was just remembered hanging up and thinking, wow, like, she didn't ask me for money. She was kind. I can call her back if I need her. And I just wanted to I thought this would be a fun place to remind you of that connection. And thank you for that gift. That was really meaningful to me.
Oh, that's wonderful. Yeah, my husband wouldn't love, oh, I'm not supposed to talk about him too much. We joke about how he's like, start getting paid for your stuff. But no, but that's the through the great work that I get to do with All About Seniors. We do a lot, and my stuff with the county, it's fun not being able to just share resources. I want to go back to a few things, and we're going to dive into this more, but this issue of identifying as a caregiver. and all of us. I know Alicia's a caregiver as well, and it's weird when we take on that issue and we're like, because before it's I'm just being a good friend, I'm being a good daughter, I'm being a good wife, I'm being a good neighbor, and or sister, things like that. And at some point it turns into, well, this is, and I don't know where that line is. You know it when you're in it, and sometimes it takes too long when you realize, oh, wait, I'm now both. Let's use a fancy research word, the intersectionality of our identities of being, you know, a partner and daughter and family member and neighbor and community member. And then you're like, no, this actually takes on something else about caregiving. So I wanted just to just sort of amen and pick up on what you said. And also one of the fun things, and it was in your introduction, is that you really marry a few different things. You marry this life course where having such a focus early on early life, pediatrics, obstetrics, you know, that kind of caregiving world, and then into the later course. So I love how you marry that. I love how you marry the research and practice world, and we'll talk about that. And then I really love, selfishly, as I said before, how you marry the public health and the social work. Your buildings are literally right next to each other, and I love the School of Social Work. Because my home is the Gilling School of Global Public Health, I love the partnership between the two and how you bring that public health frame into the social work, which frankly, there's at some point the lines get super blurry between public health, social work, and Karen's work with gerontology. And I think there's a lot of overlap. All right. So then, as we move forward, Karen, tell us a little bit, because I want to get to the exciting news about what happened recently. Tell us about you took your background and your passion and your academic training, and you turned it into a collaborative, a part of now your a real professional work that's become a real powerhouse in the state. Tell us about that.
Well, thank you. That's very nice of you to
And
say,
I just ride your coattails.
but
I came in
no.
after the fact and I was like, I do. Karen says jump, I say how high.
No, Heather, you know, I mean, like I do think about you being a part of all of it because I'm going back to 2020 when I became a student, I started going to North Carolina Coalition on Aging meetings. I loved those meetings so much that I would drive from Winston-Salem to Raleigh every month. I thought those were just because, again, as you're learning about aging and you're learning about gerontology, and you're to be around all these people, amazing. I mean, the Coalition on Aging has an amazing group of individuals and organizations that are just doing so much work around helping people be able to age well in the state. And the advocacy there that I saw was just inspiring. And so I would go to those meetings, and everybody who knows aging knows Mary Bethel. And Mary Bethel was leading that at that time. And she was connecting me to different people. And then, so this was before, sorry, this was before 2020, but that was when I was still in my studies. Then 2020 hit and everything went online. And I remember being at a Zoom Coalition on Aging meeting where they said, hey, there's this new group called the North Carolina Serious Illness Coalition. Anyone who's interested in joining that, and they gave the information and gave the link. And they talked about the fact that there was a caregiver and patient engagement work group and that they w would welcome people to come on. And they gave the four different groups. And Heather, we can talk. I mean, I want to definitely give shout outs to all the work groups because they're amazing. But for me, it was like my ears perked up and I went, caregiver and patient engagement, what a great thing that there is an organization or any sort of group, coalition of any sort that is actually focusing on caregivers as part of that patient experience. So I started going to those meetings, and I feel really lucky that they went online. I know that some of the people who were part of that group, they said they went to one in-person meeting and then it went to online. You might have been,
I
anyway.
joined after, but February
Okay.
14th, 2020 was their first meeting and then had to quickly shut down for the pandemic, and it has been a virtual group ever since.
And I was thrilled because then I didn't have to drive to Raleigh for two meetings. So anyway, the getting involved in that group really got me. I was interested in the serious illness side of things because what I was finding frustrating as a caregiver was that going back to the intersection or the lack thereof with the healthcare system and the community-based systems, where we know that so much of caregiving happens in the home, where you're having to do most of the work, and then you go into the healthcare system and they have all these great ideas, but they don't necessarily have the supports that are needed in the home. So, in going through that serious illness coalition and being a part of the caregiver and patient engagement work group, we got to hear all these different webinars and forums that the Serious Illness Coalition would have. And some of them were with the pediatric side of things. And we would hear those same stories about caregivers, parent caregivers of younger people with serious illness or disability having the same support or lack thereof issues as caregivers of those older adults. And so we put our heads together, a few of us, the people from the Serious Illness Coalition, the North Carolina Coalition on Aging, and the Children's Complex Care Coalition of North Carolina said, what if we started a group that raised caregiving to the issue that we're talking about rather than just one of many issues that were being dealt with? And so at that point, we were very much meeting on a casual basis. It was November 2021. And we kept having, at the end of every meeting, we would say, should we meet again? Because it was, we were still trying to find where we were, what we were doing, and how often we wanted to meet and whether it was worth everyone's time to keep doing it. That turned into a very good timing for us because in 2022, the national strategy, the very first national strategy to support family caregivers came out from the federal government. And we got to be part of a state network of coalitions, caregiving coalitions through the National Alliance for Caregiving and Grantmakers in Aging and John A. Hartford Foundation that allowed us to be part of learning what other states were doing and how we could, as far as advocacy and policy work and speaking to legislators and being really good advocates. And that allowed us to then say, yes, it's worth it for us to continue this work. And really, I would say that's where the Caregiving Collaborative in its current state really started blossoming.
And it is quite a story. I joined it, and I joined the North Carolina Serious Illness Coalition. I'd been a part of the Coalition on Aging, but I joined it in 22 and then quickly got so involved with it. And this is funny, this is where all of my jobs are coming together. Sarah mentioned my work with All About Seniors, and then now my work with the Serious Illness Coalition and the Caregiving Collaborative, and then this wonderful radio show. So this is kind of fun for me, all of those connections, but you really weaved in the story. It's a true grassroots effort where a bunch of folks got together, and then all of a sudden it tapped into what was happening throughout the state and also this national. And I'll say Karen and I spent the morning talking to our national partners, and out of all the states that are participating, they highlighted North Carolina, and we got to present as part of a national group connected with both the John A. Hartford Foundation and the National Alliance for Caregiving. So, oh, Alicia was giving us a little. Oh, wait, hold on, Alicia. Wait, you know what I brought for you? Wait, we could do this. We have our little sound machine. Can you hear it? Oh, you couldn't hear the sound machine? That's so weird. Oh, that's annoying. Okay. Well, never mind. Listeners, loyal listeners know that we have this cute little red sound machine. And when we tried, that's so funny that it picked up my voice, but not the machine. Anyway, that was a bunch of clapping. So, Karen, thank you for walking us through the Caregiving Collaborative. And so let's set the stage. We were doing things at the Caregiving Collaborative. And then lovely Sarah comes into the picture, and we started meeting, I don't even know, like a year ago. And we started talking. Sarah, I'll let you kind of take it over from here, but how did this really great, let's use fun words like synergy and marriage and connection and partnership and collaboration, all these fun words. What is your, 'cause your memory's better than mine, but how did we kind of build off of what we're going to announce in a moment?
Well, So part of this was I, on behalf of the Jordan Institute, was like, oh, this is really awesome potential space to work in around caregivers and research, but one needs to always approach respectfully and really understand who's doing what and what is the actual need, because we want to be of uplift and support to the work that's happening. And so as part of that, I started, you know, who should I talk to? And of course, all roads instantly led to Heather. And so Heather and I had a conversation, and it really was like this wonderful catalyst of ideas and energy. And also just, I mean, I fell in love with you again. I already did the first time when you helped me out of a crisis, but I was just like, the positive energy was really, really great. And it was nice because you were like, no, there is a space. This is the missing piece of what isn't there. And that was so encouraging. And so I was able to keep working with a lot of great folks like Aaron Kent and others that just kind of started having these conversations and really listening about where could we be of service in improving life and well-being for caregivers. And so that's the story as the preamble to January.
And what's really exciting, and I want to give a, we're all smiling so much. It's too bad, right? That we like that it's a radio show, not a TV show, but it is funny. Everyone's missing all the smiles. And what's great is, I don't know how to say it appropriately. It's nice when you have a bunch of doers that come together and want to get things done. But there's always this interesting line between people who do things. And sometimes they're the make it happen people, but other times you have to bring in that next level of leadership, like the people that have a different type of resources and, dare I say, power. And so what's great is not only did you bring in your hat as a researcher, but you are the director of an institute, and you what you brought to the table is not just your passion and your position, but also the dean, who I know has been such a big supporter of caregiving issues. And sometimes that can be the hardest, you know, how to create them among a lot of different competing priorities, especially at a university, to say, hey, this is really important. And so when you and I first met, and you said, not only is this really, really important to you and the Jordan Institute, but it's also important to the School of Social Work, and I think we could work together to make things really happen. And we knew we had lots of other colleagues at other universities too, but the leadership there, and it was like, oh. So let's see. I was trying to see how should we do it. All right, well, Sarah, let's stick. So maybe Karen, I'll change it a little bit because I want to do one more. I won't do the sound drum roll sound effect. But you mentioned the national strategy to support family caregivers. And this is a, I'll say it wrong, but it is a congressionally approved and presidentially, you know, appointed. This is a thing. It's a real thing. And there's a big national focus. And there are five focus areas. And I don't want to put you on the spot because I didn't tell you we were going to discuss this, but I don't know if you can remember the five, but clearly, oh my God, Sarah has it. Sarah.
Yeah, I mean, I was gonna say I can name, I might not name them totally perfectly, but you can quiz me here.
Wait, I printed it out, but end with
Well,
the fifth
wait.
one because it's a good lead. But you're right. Sarah has the printout and so do I. But all right.
So one is outreach and awareness. It's basically making sure that caregivers understand that they, first of all, they identify as caregivers and that they are aware of the programs and services available to them. Number two is it's about relationships and partnerships within, specifically, it deals a lot with the healthcare system and making sure that caregivers are seen as a partner in healthcare systems and other systems, of course. Number three is on supports and services, and specifically around the programs that are available. A lot about the National Family Caregiver Support Program that comes from the Older Americans Act funds and is in, the AAAs, Area Agencies on Aging in the state and other states. Number four is on financial and workplace protections for caregivers, because we all know that, well, it's a fact, and data has it that most caregivers are working. And it makes it hard because you want to make sure you're caring for your loved one, and sometimes you can't stop working because you need the money and the insurance. And so we want to make sure caregivers are protected. And then finally, the fifth goal is about research around in the caregiving space and making sure the research is that there is research on all the different aspects of caregiving and that it's appropriate for what is needed. And then later we can talk, because I know that's a good segue to what you're talking about. But I also want to say that a recent call we were on, as they're looking at updating that national strategy, is actually proposing a sixth goal, and that is around the direct care workforce and around the workforce challenges of care, the professional care workforce, and how much shortage there is, and how challenging that is to also help family caregivers when they need respite.
Okay, that was ridiculously impressive, and I'm very upset that I can't make my sound machine go off. The fact that Sarah and I both have, and Alicia, you don't have this in front of you, I'm so sorry, but Sarah and I both had the actual list, and you just did those five strategies and the five goals of the National Family Caregiving National Strategy to Support Family Caregivers. That was amazing.
You know how much I've talked about
You know, if that was my class and that was a pop quiz, you not only got 100, you got like a bonus
got
question.
extra credit
Very
because
impressive.
who knew there was a sixth goal? Because I have skipped so many, I missed for good reasons, but I have missed some meetings recently. So this was the tee up to the fifth goal, and this is where we have been talking for a while about this expanding the research. And I know that I am was completely obsessed with this issue, given here we are in Orange County, and we are, you know, clearly a few minutes away from UNC, just a few minutes more from Duke, a few minutes more from NC State, NC Central, a few minutes more from UNCG, A&T, and then, you know, UNC Charlotte and Wake Forest. And we had so many great colleagues that were participating in our meetings, and it just kept growing. And so this issue that was really vague, I'll use fun words, amorphous, this issue of like, how do we get us all together? Because this fifth goal was like expanding research and the evidence base. And it's like, wait, we have so much strength. The Aging Well Together show alone, this is like our fifth show that we've had Dr. Aaron Kent on, Dr. Nathan Boucher, and other, clearly Dr. Sarah came on. We've had so many different shows, and not to mention all the Orange County Department on Aging staff. So we have a deep bench. So Sarah, this is where you came in, and I'm giving you full credit. You took mine and Karen's, like, wouldn't it be nice? And you made it happen. So tell everyone what happened just a few weeks ago. Quite a setup. How was that?
Well, actually, it really is a group effort because so what happened was we held our kickoff caregiver research network strategy meeting, and we held it in person, and a lot of people came, which thinking back to what you were talking about with how everything went online, it felt like the first meeting just needed to be in person, and I'm so grateful for all the people that gave up half a day to be there. The folks in the room, it was the first time that I've kind of been in a meeting like that where I did not know many of the people. And the people came when we asked, why did you come? In part it was because of who invited them, Heather, Karen, Erin, Kent, and others that were really wonderful to say, hey, I know a researcher, they might be interested. And also, we were able to have some representatives from North Carolina Institute of Medicine who they have done work in this space, and also starting to get some of our coalition folks that were there, like Jenny Hobbs. And so, yeah, so we got together, and I honestly wasn't entirely sure what was going to happen. Because research can be it's a whole thing, and not everybody always kind of how people enter a space is really takes building trust as well. And so it was really just exciting. The group really was so engaged, and there were pages of notes. It took me hours to pull those notes together, and so much energy and ideas, and really actionable strategies that we want to do together, that I just really left feeling pretty excited. And I have a whole list of things that I'm hoping we can do next. And we have the next meeting on the books. And like you also said, it meant a lot that our dean was there and not only came to show her support, but encouraged us to dream big. And that was really, I felt, a kind of a magical moment, because so often, especially now and in research, it's been a time of kind of contraction and restriction. Having someone say, work together and let's dream. What would we really want for caregivers felt very inspiring. And so we sure did. So I feel like we are off and running. It's like on the top of the slide, one of those kind of whirly ones. And then, we got Heather, you were the push. We got the date on this count. This date was on the calendar since like October. And so now I feel like we're going. So there you go. Was that a good story?
And I'll say it now, because and as I didn't say it in the opening, but I've said it if for people who've listened to previous shows, because it's been on the recording. My sweet father passed away, and I couldn't come to this event that I was so excited about. But everyone, so that's why this is a fun show for me too, because I have read the 10 pages of single space notes that you put together. And gosh, we're going to have a discussion about ChatGPT and other AI things. We actually are having a whole show on AI coming up soon, because like the fact that you had to do this, like this is where we let the robots do a good summary. But it's an amazing summary, 10 single space pages and all this stuff. But I wasn't there, so this is an exciting show for me. So give us a sense of I want to like quote the Hamilton, like who was in the room when it happened, right? Isn't that the thing, like being in the room when it happened? Give us a sense of who was there. And Sarah, you can join, or Karen, you feel free to add, give us a sense of who was there.
Okay.
And if not, I do have the list, by the way.
Yeah, I mean, I almost hate to name names because
Or
I'm
you can do the
going to.
universities. How about
Yeah,
that?
I mean, you had UNC, you had UNC Charlotte, you had I forget, I know NCANT, but I forget if someone from was UNC Greensboro represented.
Maybe Duke was there.
Duke, was ECU, I forget. I think we had somebody invited from East Carolina. I'm not sure if they made it. Wake Forest. And I know, and again, I think Sarah did a great job of really making sure that this first meeting had like, let's make it so that let's get the invites that we know we have and we know we need and we know people have already said they were interested. And let's get this group together and have it be big enough, but also manageable enough so that we can grow from here. Because if you invite, and it wasn't even an invitation thing. It was like, if you just bring everyone in and you have no structure, it can be overwhelming, daunting, and not very productive. And it ended up being a really productive meeting.
So two things, because I actually have the list in front of me, not of people's names, but of the, well, I do at the end, but of the concept. So it was 26 individuals representing caregiver coalition leaders, researchers from six universities with multiple disciplines, policy experts, graduate students, and that they represented, as we kind of talked about, this importance of caregivers around aging issues, cancer, veterans issues, serious illness, children and youth with special health care needs, people with intellectual and developmental disabilities, postpartum and NICU parents, palliative care, youth caregivers, kinship care. We did something for this meeting that is very unlike us, which is we did get a little exclusive in that it did become a little bit by invitation only, because as you said, 26 people, there's a point at which it's a conference and not like this was meant to be a work group. I kept calling it the Caregiving Research Roundtable. Like this was action oriented. And we did have a few awkward earlier conversations because We all collectively have a lot of friends. We could have had 100 people in the room, but then it would have been a presentation as opposed to let's sit down. I think flip charts were there. Like, let's get to work. And so, but we promised the people, like, we will make this bigger. But that was, it was very intentional. Then I missed it. So how did you make sense? Sarah, I'll go back to you in terms of like, how did you make sense of what topics to cover? Because I know, you know, we well, let's dive into that because we've got about 15 minutes left. And so we set the stage, but what were some of the big topics that folks were excited to talk about or that their research focus was? I'll stop asking that question.
Sure. I think we talked a little bit about, well, so we structured this to first have a little bit lay of the land of, well, what's currently happening. So, and there's a lot that we are building on in terms of data and existing plans and other capacity. So it's kind of starting from a place of abundance, which was important, and a little bit of level setting. And then we did just some smaller group work about, what do we wish that we knew around caregiving and caregiving support, and what do we as researchers do we wish we had in terms of being able to do the work? And then folks just really kind of dove into that conversation. And then from there, after our dean spoke, we went into kind of like, let's dream for like the next 6 months, and then also what would be some bigger wishes that we would like to see maybe over 5 years or longer term. So that was a fairly loose structure. And I'll say it was helpful to give researchers and policymakers a space to wrestle that a little bit at the same time that we had lived experience and voice in the room, which is always important. So that was, and then it just kind of all grew from there. And there are some very important things that both can make research challenging. And also some very unique opportunities that we have in North Carolina, particularly with the two of you and the coalition, to actually allow us to do research in the most important way possible. So some of the challenges are defining caregivers, having people identify themselves as a caregiver can be obviously a very basic and foundational challenge. And also caregivers aren't in places like medical records, so it can be harder to find them. And so that might be an example of some of the challenges. But the opportunity that we have is the best kind of research is when it's actually informed by the people who are experiencing the problem that you're trying to solve. And having those experiences and perspectives in the design of an intervention or the design of a study is incredibly important. And we have some really unique opportunities to make that happen in a very hopefully trust building and organic way. And so for me, those were kind of both many things, but those are kind of two top things that popped to my mind. What do you think, Karen?
Well, I'm going to ask a question before you go into it. And Alicia, this might be a question that I was looking at Alicia and me, who are also, we try to think about what our listeners might be asking and what they might be wondering about. So there's a part of it that comes from personal experiences, and then we sort of geeked out on the research. And when people hear research, some of us get excited, but some people's eyes gloss over and they're like, oh, okay, so they're researching, this is an academic. For our listeners who might be like, why does this matter? Like, where's the connection between what was happening in that room and researchers and how they might experience their own day-to-day reality? Like, how do they work together so it's not just an academic exercise? And I think that was going through my mind if people were like, what does it matter that a bunch of researchers got together to talk about a problem?
Do you want me to say, okay,
Yes.
I'll
I mean,
say
I have
my
my own
piece.
answer clearly, but
Well,
like if our listeners were wondering, and that's where Alicia and I always try to pull in, that's why I was looking, you know, how would this matter to our listeners?
so the way I look at it, and I love answering this question because I'm not a researcher, and that's where I admire what researchers do. I don't want to get to that. I don't, not that I don't want to. I love data, so I love what I can learn from the data. But I also respect how it is hard a lot of times to get to that data and be able to, as a researcher, to be able to ask the right questions to get to the data that you need to be able to tell the story. What I look at with this research network, especially specifically in North Carolina, is, for a long time we didn't have great numbers, great data to be able to tell how many caregivers there are in North Carolina, even a good estimate. Yeah, and Sarah just held up the latest Caregiving in the U.S. 2025 report that the National Alliance for Caregiving did, and for the first time, they have state level data, and we are so excited to actually have the numbers to prove what Heather and Sarah and all of us who are in this space have been talking about for years, which is we had initially been using a number of like 1.3 million. And come to find out, and we kept saying that's conservative, that's all, oh, those are old numbers, we're pretty sure that's a lot higher. Sure enough, this year or 2025, they came out with it's almost 2.3 million. So almost a million more that have been identified as caregivers in the research in North Carolina than we originally thought. So then you have a number that you can bring to policymakers and program people and things like that. But then, so then going off of that, I look at research and saying, okay, what other things should we be looking at that need to know how big those numbers are or how big the problems are? And that's where I see the group that was there that I felt really good about is I used to joke that, you do see some research where they're like, we surveyed women 50 and older who wear orange sweaters, and they said, and it's like, okay, but what does that have to do with my day-to-day life? And when I heard some of these people talking about the research they're already doing or research they wanted to do, it was very impactful. It was information that would actually could move the ball forward on like what kinds of programs are really effective for caregivers. What are caregivers really asking for? Because in so many cases, programs are set up that might not necessarily be able to fit what the true life of a caregiver is really like. And I remember one of the conversations we got into breakout groups, which was really, really helpful. And by the way, before I forget, I want to do a shout out to Kathy Colville because she was an incredible facilitator. And Sarah, you were too. I mean, the two of you together like kept that meeting moving along, which was really incredible when you were asking people to think big picture. It's very hard sometimes to keep that. But one thing that was discussed in our smaller group that still to this day it keeps coming in my mind and thinking, okay, how do you get a research project that answers this question? It was somebody said that there isn't a lot of knowledge and understanding of the reality of how complex care is and how care really happens on a day-to-day basis. And I know that's like so like it's a simple concept, but that's where you start going, okay, so how do you measure that? Because every caregiver experience is different. And so
Right. And I think kind of building on that also, like thinking about, well, we know that respite care is helpful and education is helpful and peer support is helpful, but like how much is helpful and when is it helpful? And when a caregiver is in a crisis, how do you get resources to them in a way that they can hold on to and are helpful,
right.
right? So I think those are the kinds of questions that were emerging that are highly applied. So I think we have a highly applied group. And there is also just an interest in making sure that when we have found something that works, that we do a better job of telling people what that is. And then I was like, well, Heather has a radio show.
Well, and I'm glad because I was just doing a peek. I mean, it is amazing how many shows we've done on it just in the past year. I mean, I call out Nathan Boucher, who participated from Duke. That was episode 86, by the way. But in other meetings, and I know this topic came up, private meet not private meetings, co collaborative and coalition meetings we've had, there was a real look at what is caregiving like in our more rural communities and our more geographically isolated. And so we were able to connect Nathan with some colleagues that we have that work out of rural communities. That's where they live, in North Carolina. And so being able to make that partnership and make that connection to be able, there's a lot of us that there's a lot of similarities in our caregiving experiences, but a lot of differences also. And so identifying it, and I'm having my own issues that I'm working through a little bit because I mean, talk about numbers. 100% of the people on this call are caregivers that do extensive caregiving. I know because I know each of us personally. And I just went through an issue, and this is what I do. And I still could not believe how much I was struggling and needed more support. And I was like, how is this still so hard? And when you see things not the way it should be, as you said, if it wasn't so frustrating, it'd be fascinating. I was so frustrated, even just a few weeks ago. And so now need to turn that into action, and I've got to grieve that and then figure out, with some folks, y'all know better. Why did you leave me hanging? So in terms of, we've got just a few minutes left. Where are we going with this issue, the strategy group, the roundtable? Sure, but when you dream big, what are we looking for? Some of the big dream items.
Sarah, I'm going to let you take that.
Well, so there's part of me that still wants to build on what you just said, Heather,
Please
because
do.
I think part of the dream is that the questions that we're looking to answer are coming from the people that we want to serve, right? And so hearing, this was hard for me. How do we sort this out? Why didn't this work? So sometimes it's a matter of getting information to show that this is a systematic problem and that when we don't address it, we have this kind of outcome. And that's why we need to fix it, right? So sometimes we can be a partner in that, and in evaluating why is this working or not working, as well as coming up with new ideas. And so I think the biggest vision is that we can have a very dynamic relationship with a network of very talented researchers that we have with lots of different expertise to be very closely connected with the caregiving collaborative and other coalitions so that we just have this really cool synergy so that it really matters and that researchers feel good that what they're doing is really contributing. So I think if I had a meta dream, I think that that's what it is. I think there's real interest in thinking about how do we use the data and research to partner with advocates to improve the services and the policies that are available more directly. So I don't see this group as wanting this to be like we're going to have this 5 to 10 year study. I think there's a lot of sense towards practical applied action. And I think the other thing that I wanted to just highlight when you talked about rural is that the group feels and believes it's very important that we center the experiences of people that voices are not often heard and people that often get pushed to the side and the people that, because of the way our society is constructed, have to jump 500 more hurdles than other people. So wanting to really center their ideas. So those were some of my big ideas that I'm excited about.
Can I jump off of that real quickly before, because
Sure.
I'll forget if I don't say it right now, but like Sarah, I mean, because that's another thing that we've talked a lot about, and we did in the groups too, that we know on the Caregiving Collaborative, some of our members are parents that don't get seen. They're parents of medically fragile children, so they don't necessarily get seen as a caregiver because they're seen as a parent. And then and one of our members calls herself a medical mom, which I think is a great term because it's very different. It makes your mind think differently about what she's doing versus just regular parenting. But the other group that got talked about that isn't talked about a lot, it's starting to get more attention, is caregiving youth and the under 18 people who are doing caregiving for parents or relatives, older relatives, and how that affects their day-to-day life and going to school and getting work done. And it's just, those are the ones Heather and I often say, anytime we think we had it hard, you hear some of those stories and you go, you know what, I'm okay. And I also want to go back to the idea of this group has always been one that wants to, like, we're looking at anything we can do to pay it forward on people who have advocated for us. When you're in caregiving, you are advocating for your care recipient, whether it's a loved one or a friend or a neighbor. You don't have time to do the advocacy. That's the big picture advocacy on the national or even state level. So we want to bring those stories to the attention of the people who can actually make policy changes and things different, better supports for caregivers. Thanks.
Oh my gosh, that was wonderful. See, we knew we had too much to discuss, and this show flew by, and we could have five other shows on, and we probably will. I need to wrap us up, but I want to thank you so much, Karen Appert, the lead of the North Carolina Caregiving Collaborative, Sarah Verbiest, the director of the Jordan Institute for Families at the UNC School of Social Work. Alicia, I will try to make it into the studio hopefully next week so we can be together. A huge shout out to WCOM, FM, Chapel Hill Carrboro for letting us use this wonderful station. And of course, the Orange County Department on Aging for sponsoring our show. And as always, our listeners, I hope everyone stays warm and take care of yourselves, take care of each other. Be well.